anybody out there.
So, I see. Yeah, I'm challenged.
Changing reality. Where life is beautiful. It's the hijacker.
Monday through Thursday at midnight. Be there. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Every Tuesday afternoon on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, we present our goddess spiritual warrior, Kathy Bilski.
I command. I call to the architect of the universe's divine creators and ask for permission to quantum leap the world in all life forms on all planes and dimensions, seen and unseen, connected with planet Earth, to let us go beyond our known potential into the greatest unknown golden age the universes and worlds and all planets have ever experienced.
Kathy teaches the spiritual truth so that you may create a better life and be able to make positive changes for yourself and for the planet. She helps us remember that we are not powerless, but very creative spiritual beings having an Earth experience. Time to quantum leap into the age of divine enlightenment and let Kathy provide you with the tools of knowledge you need to awaken spiritually. That's the Quantum Leap Show. Let light unite every Tuesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The Empire is in peril.
You're probably too young to know, but the Empire is always in some kind of peril.
I may have been overly rude earlier. When I called you a pirate.
And I may have been overly charitable when I said I wasn't.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Be here Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time to catch Roxy Lopez straight from the Valley of the Sun. Her discussions run from chemtrails to sovereignty, aliens to conspiracy facts. So join us for The Truth Denied with Roxy Lopez. Again, that's Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
You ever get tired of being wrong? You can't kill the future!
You know what the difference is between you and me?
I make this look good.
Eastern Time, and it is time for The Whole Agenda with Robert Pepino right here on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where the truth never sleeps.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Whole Agenda Radio Show. I'm your host, Robert Pepino, broadcasting to you live on Revolution Slips. freedomslips.com. And it's a pleasure to be here with you once again, as always, on this incredible Friday night. And I want to thank each and every one of you, as always, for being part of this broadcast, because believe me, without you, I would not be here. And folks, I just want to throw this out there for you real quick. Revolution Radio is a 100% listener-sponsored broadcast. Okay, it's number one, as a matter of fact, listener-sponsored broadcast. And we would not be here without you. That's just a fact. So if you can, please donate to revolutionradio.com, $5, $10, $20. However you can donate, please do so. As a matter of fact, you can even go to YouTube, listen to our archived audio podcasts. Bear with the commercial for a minute or two, because it throws a few cents our way to help, to help pay for this broadcast. And believe me, it's not cheap to do this, but we're all here because we want to be here, because we are all here promoting the truth of what's really, really going on. So again, if you can just, go to the website, freedomslips.com. Go to the donation section and donate if you can, please. We need all the help you can get. Now, tonight, I am very, very proud and happy, ecstatic, actually, to have this guest on. He's been on my broadcast before on a different radio station, which I used to broadcast on, by the way. But now I'm here on Freedom Slips because it's such an incredible network with all the incredible hosts. And, it's wonderful to be part of something much bigger than myself. But moving forward, he's going to be on with us for 2 hours this evening, and his name is Stan Dale. Now, Stan Dale has held an above top secret security clearance working undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Now, currently, Stan is working on a Tesla-based energy system and several propulsion projects. This man has given so many radio interviews, you can't even begin to count. And most popularly, of course, most of you realize this, Stan is a... he is a staple of Coast to Coast AM. I don't have to, you all know that. And he is an active partner in Dale Enterprises LLC and is the CEO of Halo Orbital Technologies. Now, he and his wife also wrote the book Dare to Prepare, and it basically is an all-encompassing book, 26 chapters of the realization of what we are going through and how to prepare for what we are going to face from now into the very near future. Now, Stan has multiple websites, which is www.standale.com, www.millennium/arc.net, and
dash arc.
I thought I said dash. I'm sorry, Stan. And, of course, standale.com again as well. Stan, welcome to the program. It's an absolute pleasure and my honor to have you here with me on this network for the very first time.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate you calling me back onto the show. By the way, I just need to correct one little tiny thing in that intro there in my bio. Holly actually wrote all of that book, The Dare to Prepare. I only did the, the pre-press, preparing it for printing and did the cover design. But other than that, Holly did the lot. So I didn't actually help with the writing of that book.
Well, then, Holly, I want you to know that we thank you all for what you have done. And I know that it was a massive effort on your part. And thank you for doing that. But, Stan, how have you been?
Well, as you pointed out, I've been a little bit busy with interviews. And I try not to turn interviews down because people want to know what's going on. But people have asked for so many of late that I haven't been able to do the work and my research that I wanted to, because I have to do work in the normal family business. And like everybody else, you got to steal time after hours to work on this. Other than that, getting older and creakier and get up in the morning, I have to take a poll of my joints to see what you're working and things like that.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and God bless you. God, the amount of work you do, you're working all day long and then giving interviews at night. How do you find time to sleep?
Oh, I do. Holly lets me sleep. I'll get to bed by 11:30 or so at night, and she will already be asleep by 9:30. But so we kind of cross over in waking periods, and I'll get up around 7:30 or 8. She lets me get my 8 hours of sleep and then get started on the tasks of the day. So between us, we put in, 90 hours a week, each of us.
Oh, my God. 90 hours a week apiece. Extraordinary. And, you've been doing this for a long time, which is amazing, Stan, because I wish I had your stamina. I'm 46 years old, and I wish I had the stamina that you do. And I know you're only a couple of years older than me, but...
yeah, just a few.
I got to tell you, I bless you and I thank you. And I'm very proud, to know you. And
thank you, Rob.
And to do what you do. That's all I can say. But, Stan, there's so much going on. I mean, where to begin? I mean, the last time we talked, the asteroids hadn't even been an equation in what's gone on in the last 3 weeks. I mean, and now, just as of what, yesterday, there was another asteroid, I believe, over Cape Town, Africa, which I think got very little report. But Stan, what is going on with all these asteroid events, and why?
Well, look, I can only kind of speculate, but obviously we had that one meteor pass underneath our orbital cap for communication satellites. It was within, 22,000 miles or so of the surface of the Earth. And the same day that it was due to come over, it was preceded by that meteorite that actually exploded over Russia. And I'll get back to that in a minute, because the Russians made a complaint about that I want to address. But anyway, we've had, two other meteorites that actually entered the atmosphere after that, all in the space of, a couple of weeks. Now, this would indicate some sort of a cluster of objects that we're passing through, or they're passing past us, whatever. They tell us at NASA and various observatories that it was purely a one in a zillion kind of coincidence that on the same day that comet passed, DA-14 passed inside our outer satellite orbits, that another one hit Russia from a different direction that had nothing to do with it. And then, of course, here within a couple of weeks, two more come into the atmosphere and make a pretty healthy showing. A coincidence, I'm sure. You see, nothing to do with each other. But if they're not, I'm amazed, because these are hitting as though it were a cluster coming past us, the leftover debris from a comet or something like that passed a long time ago. Now, there was a comet, it didn't quite graze the sun, but it came pretty close, that just passed, what was the comet's name? Right past the sun here just recently, I forget, but it did cause, at the same time it was passing close approach to the sun, an eruption on the sun, a coronal mass ejection.
You're talking about Pan-STAR, right?
Yeah, Pan-STAR, sorry, yeah, I should know that. Foolishly, I spent a number of nights out there with my jacket on in the freezing cold with my binoculars and looking out west, and clouds kept obscuring it. I never got to see the darn thing, but Pan-STARRs, yes. But anyway, now Comet Icen coming close approach to the sun in November is what they call a sun grazer. It gets even closer than this Pan-STARRs did. Now, Pan-STARRs didn't actually touch the visible surface of the sun, but as it approached the sun in its path, large coronal mass ejections and flares popped out right underneath it. And you can't tell me that sun grazers and comets that come real close to the sun do not affect the sun's behavior. There's definitely some sort of a relationship, and I think it might be electrostatic, that causes reactions in both the comet and the star, or the sun itself in this case. Now, I wanted to get back to something. Let me finish coronal mass ejections, too. We had a coronal mass ejection today that has a 70% chance of, about 70% of it going to hit the Earth by Sunday. A reasonable-sized coronal mass ejection. We'll get a chance to see a little bit of radio interference and a few other things, perhaps. There are going to be more of these. I am reasonably certain that even though they cannot tell you positively where a lot of these smaller meteors are, because you can't see them in the optical telescopes, and if they're not putting out a heat signature, you can't see them with an infrared scope. They're just too small to image, and you can't do much on figuring their course when they're coming right at you, and suddenly you say, oh yeah, there it is, I see it. By the way, there it went. It's too close, too fast. And that's why they apologize and say, look, we told you earlier, but they couldn't see it, and I don't think they could. Now, the Russians complained about that second meteor, or the meteorite, actually, that attended the DA-14 thing here a couple weeks back. And the Russians said it was exploded high overhead so that it didn't arrive in one piece, that it fragmented over Russia. Now, that's to their advantage in that it spread out the damage and didn't make it a localized, atom bomb-type hit where in that town close by. They said the U.S. was testing some sort of a new Star Wars shield that broke it up. And everybody kind of went, oh, yeah. But I am almost positive that was what was happening. Because just right before that meteor came, I had been talking on the shows that I've been interviewed on about something I detected in Romania, where the Star Wars base, the shield, is being set up. It's not to be operational until 2015, but I'm sure they were doing tests now, setting up something like what's called a Tesla wave transmitter. And it makes hotspots on the other side of the planet from Romania. In fact, if you go to my website and go to the show images page, and you'll see that as of the 31st of January, right in the top thing, I have a missile shield anomaly section, which will tell you all about why I'm pretty sure they set this shield up over Romania. Now, if the shield that they're setting up and testing, the Americans and NATO, who are joint holders of that base in Romania, if it is just a little base to shoot missiles at Iranian and other missiles coming in toward Europe, $500 million, half a billion, would seem overspending to make this base. Now, I think they're going to have missiles there, surface-to-air missiles. But I think those will be to defend the base against incoming stuff, rockets, missiles, drones, whatever. Because when you talk shield, it doesn't necessarily mean missiles. It can mean a solid thing or a covering thing. And Nikola Tesla did propose in 1935 to the U.S. government that if they would fund him, he would build an electromagnetic shield over America that no moving thing could get through over a certain speed. It would destroy it.
Stan, let me ask you something. I mean, this is bringing me back to the Reagan era and the Star Wars program. Mm-hmm. Is that something that would be part of this?
No, Star Wars, in the Reagan administration, they tested on a battleship down off the southern coast of Australia near Adelaide. They knocked out an Australian test craft called a Jendavik aircraft. And one of my friends was a photographer on the battleship when they did this. And they actually did that with a laser beam that shot the Jendavik aircraft down from 5 miles away. But it wasn't like a normal laser beam. What happened is they shot kind of charged donuts, toroids, out of this gun on the deck of the ship, extremely high speed, spinning charged donuts out around a laser beam in the middle of it. And the laser beam was doing nothing more than creating a charged or ionized conductor out of the air to the target. And what happened at the target was these charged donuts that were traveling along the outside of the laser beam hit the target and scooped out the metal, electric charge and magnetic fields along with the laser, scooped out the metal where it hit it and bored a hole through it. Just a laser by itself doesn't work too well because it makes the metal melt. It becomes a reflector then and reflects the laser beam off. So this was part of Star Wars, was to have this device so that they could target and take down these aircraft. It was much more efficient than just a laser-guided system. One of the problems they did find was that the magnetic field of the Earth does cause the beam to wander a bit. So, it had its pluses and minuses that way for locking onto a target. And they had to use a camera that fired at 50,000 frames a second just to image the toroids going to the target along the laser beam.
Does it have to do with anything like the line of sight situation? Because
the horizon or line of sight?
Yes.
Well, yes and no. It does go around the horizon. A Tesla-type system will generate a wave pattern that goes all the way around the Earth and meets itself at the other side of the Earth from the tower and then reflects back toward the tower where more energy is added, and it goes back to the other side of the planet and meets itself and then bounces back. And it starts stacking up energy this way. And I have an animation of that showing how it works on that website they were saying about the missile shield thing under my show images page, which you can get to if you go to standale.com and you scroll down just a page or two to where it says more headlines. It has a picture of a microphone, and off to the right it'll say Stan's interviews, show images. And if people click on that, they will then be able to see at the top row, right in the middle, missile shield anomaly. And when you click on that, that will take you to a whole discussion about what I discovered, how I discovered it, and it's building a shield like an umbrella all the way around the Earth. It's strongest at the opposite side of the Earth and at the transmitter. It gets weaker around the equator. It thins out. And the animation will show you that. But what this means is that anything moving above a certain altitude within that shield at the pole, at the transmitter in Romania, and moving at a certain minimum speed, anything that's doing that will be a conductor of some sort, you know, metallic, and it will generate eddy currents in it that will make electric shorts through all of the guidance and everything, maybe even blow it up, but it'll certainly take it off target. And they don't have to, with that kind of a system, they don't have to actually track it and put a beam at it or a projectile or a missile or anything. It just has to break the rules of certain altitude and above it and certain speed and above it, and it will fry it as it flies through it. That's why the Russians are getting excited about it, because the missile shield base in Romania is allegedly to stop missiles coming at Europe from Iran. That's not Russia, and it should have nothing to do with Russia. The reason they're complaining is because that shield is spread out over them too, and it's going to make them behave over their airspace, and if they launch any missiles toward the United States or anything else, it'll fry their componentry too.
All right, this is Russian technology.
What is?
This missile base or Tesla base type system?
No, this is Americans and NATO over in Romania.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to get some clarification because, you know, we're talking about Romania here.
Yeah.
And that's
Romania is you know, they've allied themselves with NATO, and so they've given an old Air Force base over at Deviselu. And that Air Force base is going to now be stocked with, about 250 Army personnel, a Romanian-based commander, and about 250 U.S. Navy personnel, which is odd because Romania is landlocked. There's no Navy need there except that, as I say in the article that I wrote on the website, the U.S. Navy has been instrumental and in the forefront of using Tesla-type transmitters since 1962. I mean, I've got pictures of some of the transmitters that you can see on Google Earth.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, though, Stan. I mean, let me just jump in here real quick. I mean, you know, Romania is basically on the border of Russia. Wouldn't the Russians have the same technology basis?
Well, they did. They would, because they started this back in the, when was it? Back in the 70s, I think it was, when they had what was called the Woodpecker signal that the ham radio guys picked up all over the earth. And it came out of a place in Riga, part of the Soviet Union at the time. Now, Riga was a Tesla-type transmitter, the base there. When you have two transmitters working, the Russian shield and our shield, right next to each other, it then produces a beat pattern between the standing waves that form in these two systems. And they won't be at the same frequency. They'll be different frequencies, most surely. And what will happen is it will produce some pretty weird effects on the ground and in the air where these two fields overlap. A case in point here in the central United States, in the northern portion of it, Project Sanguine by the U.S. Navy years ago, they were trying to build these high-voltage antennas and irritated a couple of local farmers that I know about. One farmer complained because when he goes sit on the john to take a little break there, a lightning or arcs would come up from the water and grab him on the backside. And it's because the toilet.
Sorry, I have to laugh.
A lightning shot out. Yeah, I know. I can hear you. But the problem was that the shape of the bowl, the water in the conductor there, the insulation, all of it formed a tuned circuit that picked up the frequency that the Navy was testing with and became a Tesla receiver and sent up a spark. Another farmer in the same region was complaining to the Navy because he knew they were testing something out there. And he was up on a metal, tin roof up on his hay barn, which is just a roof with, insulated wood posts down to ground. And he was repairing some of that, putting some new sheet in. And they turned on their transmitter, and it charged him up. And he was like a piece of paper on your comb when you comb your hair. He danced right on off of the thing and fell down into the barnyard. So he complained, look, guys, this has caused me to slip off my thing. It charged me up, and I can't hold on to the roof, and down I go.
Boy.
So their suggestion was, okay, we'll tie a metal chain around your waist and ground it so that you don't build up charge and everything will be okay. But this is a kind of unpredictable results you can get inside of a shield transmitter like that at certain points where it reacts to ground devices. The objective is, of course, to make this field resonate at higher altitude so that it doesn't affect you on the ground. But when you get the Russian's version mixing with the American version, problems will ensue. And I mean, I can speak from experience. When I was testing one of my Tesla coils back in Australia years ago, the wife was in the kitchen and one of the boys came running up to the garage where I was working on it. I was firing the test of it and I was making some nice million volt arcs in the air outside. And Papa, Mama said to turn that off. There's sparks coming out of the water faucet in the kitchen and the fridge is biting us. And so
I could just picture this in my mind.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Picture a happy wife too.
Right.
Oh Lord. But anyway, and now I do think that the asteroid coming in, it was, you know, iron nickel type or meteorite eventually that came in over Russia and exploded. It may have just had eddy currents appear within it, moving at, you know, 30,000 kilometers a second or miles an hour, whatever it was, but 30,000 kilometers miles an hour. It generated short circuits in there and heating currents, high current currents. Which made the inside of the asteroid or the meteor overheat and explode. And I think that's what caused the Russians to claim that the Americans were testing a new missile shield thing and it blew the asteroid apart, or the meteor apart. You see, they wouldn't have said, look, the Americans launched a missile at the incoming meteor and blew it up. They were testing their missile shield and it caused the meteor to explode. Now, that's what they said.
Right. But
it tells you that it's something different than a rocket.
Well, conventional rockets don't have that capability or speed. If I believe I'm correct in saying that.
Yeah, you are. I mean, just think about it. I mean, and it's not that they're worrying about the American NATO base there in Romania with missiles that could stop a Russian launch against the United States or Europe from either side of Russia, because we would have to have a missile capable of catching up to them and, you know, real fast and blowing them up. And you can't do that right now. I mean, they can't make hypersonics that will stabilize. That's something they've been trying to do, but they can't do it. And so it's definitely not that they're worried about us shooting down their missiles with a missile, anti-missile missile. They are worried about that shield, that electromagnetic Tesla wave type shield.
Well, go ahead, Stan. Go ahead. There's so many questions I want to ask you, you know.
Okay, well, I want to address the point here. How I actually found that was, you know, every day I do earthquake forecasts, or at least 6 days a week.
Yes, which I follow on a daily basis, by the way.
Now, there are two components that I put into that map. One is changes in the sea surface temperature daily, anomalous changes that are rapid. And the other is electrical charge changes over fault lines. So I merge them together to get a composite picture so I can predict where the earthquakes are going to be. Well, the last 8 days, actually, I've been seeing on my heat signature maps of the Indian Ocean, 5 bright, hot, anomalous, fast-moving hot spots that don't move over the Indian Ocean on the surface of the sea there. I've never, ever seen anything like this in all the years I've been doing this kind of research. Never. And last night, I was talking with a guy on another show, and we were chatting about it. I was talking about this, how I'd seen this anomaly, and we had Holly put it up on the website. And I looked at the map while I was talking to him, because I was, you know, clicking my mouse to look at the missile shield article and just kind of looking at some other stuff to go on to. And it dawned on me, what is on the other side of the planet from the equator there at the tip of India and in the northern Indian Ocean where all these hot spots are appearing, what's on the exact antipodal position on the other side of the planet? And it's Ecuador, it's Panama, it's Nicaragua, it's Guatemala. And all of those are hot. They have been hot for like probably 10 days showing earthquake signs that do not go away. They don't just appear like normal. They do not go away.
Well, Stan, can I ask you this? I mean, could this be part of the electromagnetic distortion either being caused by the sun or because the planet itself, our planet itself, is at such a low magnetic frequency and the pole is wandering at a very rapid rate? And I know this is not an exact science, at least as far as we've been told. Could the electromagnetic field cause some sort of distortion in, you know, deep within the mantle to cause these hot spots?
It could, and it may be, you know, a long-term effect that's going on here for the next few months or so, because, you know, as you know, the sun's pole is about to flip in this current cycle. But it's got a double peak cycle coming, one 2013, one 2015.
Stan, what's a double peak cycle? Oh, I never understood that.
The sunspot cycle is a thing that lasts about 11.8 years before it repeats. And it's the number of sunspots that they count on the sun during that period. And what they do, I mean, they've been doing this since the late 1500s. There's been scientists that have been counting those little black spots on the surface of the sun and the numbers of them. And they would say, okay, at a certain date, there would be more sunspots than normal, and then it would peak off like a sine curve, and they would drop off, and then it would come up to another peak. And that peak to peak high counts of sunspots roughly is about 11.8 years in between times. Now, once that I can see, maybe twice in the history of sunspot keeping, there has been a solar sunspot cycle that had a double peak right in the middle of it, a peak that didn't get up quite as high as it should, drops down a bit, and then a year later, pew, up higher, and then it finally troughs off and goes to behave like it normally would.
So is that what might have caused the what we're seeing now, the Carrington event of 1859, I believe?
It may have something to do with it, but you see, the sun, the Russians proved this probably 25, 30 years ago, that the sun's already burned up half of its hydrogen. It's over the limit now then, and where it can cease to be the hydrogen reaction is getting a helium reaction, which would be a warmer sun. But that will be a nuclear chemistry change inside the sun.
Does warmer mean brighter as well? Because if you ask me, the sun is not the same color it used to be 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
What do you think it is?
It used to be a yellow sun. It is a white sun now.
Okay. That's in the ultraviolet spectrum. Are you familiar with the biblical prophecies saying that the light of the moon during the judgments of God and the tribulation, the light of the moon will be as like seven times brighter?
Stan, I got to tell you, I'm very unfamiliar with it. So okay, please enlighten me.
Okay, that is one of the prophecies in the book of the Revelation of John. Now, we look at that. We look at what the Hopis say and a few other things and try to relate them to current events and see if there's a consistent pattern. Now, if the light of the moon is going to be seven times brighter and the light of the day will be as 7 days light, you'd think that that would fry everything on the planet. But if it's going to the ultraviolet side of the spectrum, you can have that bright light, and it will cause radiation damage to your skin, but it won't exactly set you on fire. It will cause increased heat on the planet, but not seven times as much heat, because obviously that would just melt everything down. That's what I think you're seeing, is the increased ultraviolet. And I know, having talked to the officers in charge of the service in the Air Force that tracks this from the sun, that the sun started emitting two new ultraviolet spectra in 1992. Private briefings were classified briefings were given to the Air Force, and a number of astronomers were invited to comment on it and see what it meant. And as far as they could see, the increased ultraviolet in these ranges would not produce cancer in living tissue. And the worst that would happen, that they could see it happening, was that certain phytoplankton and microorganisms in the oceans would absorb that infrared radiation and multiply rapidly and then raise the temperature of the ocean because of their just daily metabolism. And the ultraviolet wouldn't reflect back out in that case. So we are seeing a change in the physical chemistry of the sun. The nuclear chemistry equation is changing, and I defy you to find any scientist worth his salt in solar physics to say that he understands completely what's going on, because everyone right. I've talked to says, we have no idea what's happening.
Well, Stan, let me ask you this. I mean, we've gone from, okay, helium is basically been exhausted, or
hydrogen
has been exhausted. Now we've got
it's just under the halfway point, but
okay.
it's enough to tip the reaction.
But it's switching, so there's a switch going on from hydrogen to helium, correct?
Right.
And this is why we're seeing a brightness in the sun.
I think so. And again, I say I think so because I'm no better at this. In fact, much poorer at the physics of it than the guys who do this for a living.
Well, I'm not a scientist, but all I have to do is look outside. I can't look at the sun, Stan. I cannot look at it. Before, you know, if I go back 10 years, I was able to look at it, at least momentarily. I can't even look at it now. It's not possible.
Well, as this gets worse, you're going to see that even though you're not looking at the sun, you can be driving on a highway in your car, that the reflected ultraviolet off of objects around you will be so bright that it will make your eyes water and you'll cry. And it'll penetrate through your clothing and you'll feel pinpricks from it. Not so much heat, but the pinpricks of the radiation hitting you. I've experienced it under an ozone layer hole in Perth probably 15, 20 years ago. So I know what it's going to be like, but it's going to be much worse than that. You will have to hide inside shelter to stay out of the way of the ultraviolet.
Is it even possible at one point, once it switches completely over to helium, is it possible to a certain degree to live in this, or do we have to find a new way of living under these conditions?
Interestingly enough, I think that will probably be some time off before we go to a helium-helium reaction. And I expect the sun to get larger in diameter and become a red giant eventually, but not in our lifetime. And the strange thing in some of the biblical prophecy I was talking about in the book of John, in the Revelation of John, rather, it does say that after 1,000 years of the millennial reign of the Messiah on the planet, that the earth and the heavens will disappear in a fervent heat and will be replaced by a new heaven and a new earth. Now, that sounds to me like something's going to burn the planet up, bang, gone, and probably the solar system and our sun, et cetera, will all die or disappear in this. And the new heaven, new earth will be in a parallel universe. I don't know. It's kind of all conjecture at this point.
And I completely understand that. But what about the fact of that we are going into this, I guess, solar maximum? If we receive, a direct, massive direct, like an X flare, which produces an XEMP, that would pretty much fry at least half of the planet, I would assume, because, as we're rotating and the sun is it comes off the sun, so it's coming directly at us. We're rotating, it all depends on how it hits us in the rotation, would fry about half the planet. Is that correct?
Well, it could. Now, I don't think that, I think the heat will build up, certainly, but I think we're going to see more ultraviolet, and the biblical predictions for this time and the Hopi predictions say that for a period of a few weeks that the sun will become so warm that it will boil fish on the top of the ocean in the rivers. It'll burn a third of the green grass and trees. And the Hopi have started building underground igloos of mud called kivas to hide in for that several-week period while this passes over us. Now, we will be able to survive that, but I tell you what, if you're here when that happens, roads that have tar or bitumen or pitch in them will melt and become gooey, sticky masses, and tires will melt on cars and explode. It will not be pretty. Everything will come to a stop, and everything on the surface will be ruined. There will be two-thirds of things left to start life again, trees and stuff like that, and fish at deeper depths in the oceans will survive. But it's not going to be easy.
Well, and I completely understand what you're saying, because I know that the the temperature of ocean levels have risen by 0.5%, with, I think, within what, the last 10 years?
1.5 degree centigrade, yep.
Yes, that is beyond shocking. And now you see all these mammal and marine deaths almost on a daily basis, Stan. Yes. And I've attributed to, okay, probably with the smaller land mammals and aquatic sea life, probably because they're so small, they can't handle that half a degree of temperature change and they've died off. But like for whales and dolphins, pods, even larger land animals and birds, I think their magnetic field has been completely thrown off. Due to the low magnetic field that we have going on. So, I mean, there's a multitude of things happening. You have the sun going through this phase, you know, as you mentioned, switching from hydrogen to helium is in that stage. I can't look at the sun. I know I can't because my eyes water. Even, I mean, just today, Stan, I was outside and I just held up my head for a second to look at the sun. My eye just wanted to start watering and I had to, you know, turn away. Including that, the magnetic field changing, and of course, you know, I'm trying to kind of figure out how the chemtrails are playing into all this, because we are being sprayed on a constant basis, like every day. Today, again, they were spraying heavily. I don't know if they're trying to protect us from radiation from the sun or just radiation from space or whatever else may be affecting us or will affect us. But this is like a menagerie of things happening all at one time. And it's so bizarre to try and wrap my head around all this. You're thinking, well, you know, you can go back 10 years, you know, 10, 11 years, say, well, we know going through a solar cycle. But then what about all the animal deaths? What about all the sinkholes? What about even you were talking about earthquakes earlier, Stan. I watched the USGS, I swear to you, Stan, I watched them do this, and this was just the other day, and I forgot to mention it earlier to you when we were talking before the show. There came up an earthquake, I think it was near Papua New Guinea. It showed up as a 5.5 or 5.2. I clicked it off, and then I clicked it back on because I wanted to go back and look at something else. The moment I clicked back on, it registers at a 4.7.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I saw it.
I'm going, okay, you know, USGS is part of the government. The government is okay. If they're part of the system, they're being told, look, you need to change this or you're not going to have a job, because obviously the scientists might be aware or aren't aware of what's happening, simply want to keep their jobs and continue, you know, to live their lifestyle through their paycheck. It's you know, this culmination of everything, and it seems like we're headed to this peak, this valley, and my God, you know, you could bring the, like you said, the big biblical point of view to this and the scientific point of view of this, and you could put them together and they almost match equally in what they're, in what is being said from at least the scientific community like yourself. And from the non-bought-out mainstream
media?
Media and the viewpoint from the non-bought-out people who look at biblical prophecy and says, look, there's an equal understanding on both sides of this. And I think you bring both of that out. It's amazing to me that I'm watching this happen. And yet you have the mainstream media, the mainstream everything, completely ignoring all of this. Like it's non-existent, like nothing is happening. It's beyond belief to me.
Well, there are definitely White House directives for USGS. I've had geologists inside the organization leaking it to me. Names aren't important, but they have been told that before they release any earth-shattering news about an earthquake or volcano or whatever, they have to run it by a division that the White House has set up to get permission to make an announcement or to release the data on their website. And there's one project going on monitoring Yellowstone where the USGS engineers and drivers of cars and vehicle maintenance people, everybody was involved, the IT people, that they were all had to sign the National Secrets Act, in essence, a piece of paper that said, if you let this out, you know, if you talk about what's going on here, you will be fined, you know, like $10,000, imprisonment up to 5 years. And, you know, that's kind of worse than your paycheck being docked. That's serious. Now, there is a muzzle that is in place over USGS. Another chappie, he's got a PhD that corresponds with me, has sent me some of his data he's been collecting over the last few years showing that USGS would report an earthquake at one value when it should be like maybe even a whole magnitude above that. You can't use the Richter scale accurately over a Richter 5. You have to go to the moment tensor equation because Richter, when he did this down in Southern California, they only made it for local conditions there. And after about 375 miles, the Richter type measurements aren't reliable at all. But anyway, there are differences between the formula they use and the Richter formula that will produce differences in the magnitudes of earthquakes, you know, if they're fairly reported. But they are being downgraded. I've seen it on Holly's data where they have revised their annual counts. Next year, they'll put things down. They'll downgrade stuff just like crazy so that you don't see an increase in the earthquakes and get panicky about it. Now, you were talking about the ocean temperature dropping, or rather increasing, a half a degree centigrade. If you look back in history in the glacial records, the mean temperature of the Earth dropped 2 degrees centigrade, and that formed the Ice Age, which covered North America and glaciers. Now imagine the reverse of that. If you go up 2 degrees centigrade, we'd be an inferno. Do you see what I'm saying? It doesn't take big degree mean temperature changes before something big happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're going to see more drought. New Zealand is in the worst drought it's had in 30 years, and we're probably here at the 20-year level here where I am in Colorado, if not longer.
Well, it's the same here in Arizona, Stan. We're at least at a 20-year drought here, and people aren't aware of that.
Well, when they get the bill or get told they can't water or, you know, worst case, I guess they can't shower except on certain days, they'll understand. It'll be a bit late then, but people better be turning off their taps and being very frugal with their water now. Now, the earthquakes, they are increasing, and the larger above Richter 5 are increasing on the west coast, the western side of the Pacific Ocean. But what I was starting to tell you a while ago about the anomaly I found, which is on our website, the anomaly of the hot spots in the Northern Indian Ocean, the fact that they are exactly opposite of something that's breaking up the plate, the tectonic plates breaking up on the eastern side of the Ring of Fire from Guatemala down to Ecuador, just the southern port of Mexico down to the northern portion of Ecuador. And there's already talk about this in the scientific community that a new fracture in the tectonic plate there may be underway off the coast of Northwest Africa, or Northwest South America, sorry. Now, how fast it's going to occur, you know, they can argue about that. But what I'm seeing here is something that I'm trying to understand. One side of the planet it's got five thermal anomalies that are hanging around in the Indian Ocean. And on the opposite side of that, we've got a plate breaking up and earthquake signatures like crazy electrically going, you know, off, you know, for the last 8-9 days.
Now, do you mean by thermal underwater volcanoes?
Well, I looked for that and couldn't find any evidence of that. But these are – the sea surface temperature is up 2 or 3 degrees C over five distinct regions. It's like plumes. And then I calculate the rate at which it's increasing, and it's been speeding, it's been accelerating this change in temperature for 8 days, and it's not moving. And my first thought was, volcanoes, no such luck. but this is from the core of the planet. I think these are heat events that may be caused by electrical transfers inside the core of the planet, because in a direct current, which we do have in the Earth, a direct current can take heat from one end of the current flow and pass the heat to the other end of the current flow, cooling one end of the wire or conductor and heating the other. And I don't know, I can't see the electrical signature here doing anything but being cool around the Central American part where these earthquakes are the signal, the seismic stresses are very obvious. And I see coolness, you know, kind of either stationary or slowly cooling, whereas we're seeing a rapid heating on the other side of the planet. It's as though in the magnetic core of the planet, there's a secondary set of pole, like a mini pole set up, and we have, I guess it would be like a North Pole in Central Africa and a South Pole in Central America, and a South Pole over in the Indian Ocean. So the heat's being pumped one way to the other or vice versa, which can happen when the Earth's magnetic field in the core is in turbulence. And you are right, it is weakening. And there are magnetic field images of our field that show that it has, you know, some minor poles of magnetic poles from eddy currents in the core's fluid and in its turbulent motion. Something is unusual. I guarantee it. I can't be sure what exactly, but I know that it's big, and it's going to cause a lot of earthquakes and volcanoes in Central America there, all the way down to the northwest corner of South America. And I don't know what's going to happen in the Indian Ocean. If it keeps heating up like this, there's going to be some severe storms, cyclones, hurricanes, very bad tropical storms hit Indonesia and the Philippines as a result of it, if it blows that way. There's something really wrong right now in the last 8 days. And all I can do is tell people, here's what I've got, and here's what I think, and hope to goodness that someone, you know, with more access to data that we need to know can figure it out and let us know.
Well, that alone is, that's pretty sobering if you think about what you just said. I'm just wondering at this point if it has any relevance to the Juan de Fuca plate up near the Washington, Oregon, California border, and if that could fracture along that tectonic line from South America going through Central, running up through Mexico all the way up to that hemisphere.
It could, and I'm keeping an eye on it. I've seen minor seismic pressures building up in the Juan de Fuca even today when I put the map out. I saw small signals. They are not what I would call large signals yet, but I do know that that area, the Juan de Fuca plate, is under severe stress normally, but it's not releasing or rupturing yet. And when it does, it will probably release a magnitude 9 earthquake on the new scale, at least a magnitude 9. And it will make tidal waves, and it will hurt the northwest coast of the United States a lot, and part of Canada a lot. But what I'm seeing now is south of that, into Central America, and a little bit moving up into the Baja. If I do feel that the data shows that, you know, it's imminent, I do put up an alert. I put up one alert like that till probably in January. And the pressure built up around Los Angeles, and it dissipated through a bunch of small earthquakes because Los Angeles has a bunch of sideways fault lines and some parallel ones to the San Andreas fault line. And the energy was dissipated through all these connected fault lines instead of being one major rupture. And that was good. Now, I haven't seen a signal that bad since then, but I will put it up, you know, because obviously we live in America, got friends that live there and whatever.
Of course.
What is really just amazing me is that if this is something to do with a magnetic minor pole, a set of poles, magnetic poles inside the planet, is these are spinning. It's like a top laying on its side, and you've got the main North Pole. It's a vertical top, and this is spinning on its side with one pole in the Indian Ocean, the other over in the northwestern part of South America. How but, can but you have the, two of those operating at the same time?
Right, but that would that be directly related to the direct electromagnetic shrinking of our magnetic field?
Well, it's unstable. I mean, if you've ever played, you're probably not old enough to have done this, but in the old days we used to have tops that we'd wrap a string around and we'd throw them out and have top spinning contest. And
I'm old enough. I'm old enough.
Well, you'd have the top spinning okay, there.
Stan, hold it right there. We're going to break real quick.
All right.
We'll pick this up right after break. So look, everybody stick with us. This is the Whole Agenda Radio Show broadcasting to you live on Revolution Radio with my very special guest, Stan Deo. And we're going to pick up the conversation right after this break. Everybody stick with us. We'll be right back after this.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
You're far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
General quarters, all hands at your battle stations.
Be nervous about your toll. I'll do the mastermind around here.
You who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Bam, check it out, every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are until I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time, join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. The finder of lost children and missing persons,
Monique Lassan,
surveillance, civil and criminal investigations. I investigate.
You know, I am the chosen one.
Do not underestimate the power of good, and do not dismiss the strength of the child.
Yes, every Thursday afternoon on Revolution Radio, come join our very own eye investigatrix, Monique Lassonde, with her private eye X-Files.
Private Eye X-Files, every Thursday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
I realize it's very hard for you to take in, but it's your destiny to find the golden child.
There is no good and evil. There is only power, and those too weak to seek it.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Be sure to tune in weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Strange Universe with Sean David Morton. The strange, interesting, and engaging wide variety of topics. So be here. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. If you plan to call in and speak with one of our hosts, please turn down your radio and separate yourself from any background noise and wait for the area code to be called on before you speak. And don't forget, Revolution Radio freedomslips.com is listener supported. So stop by the homepage, freedomslips.com, visit the site support area to help support the host you're listening to's airtime. Thank you. Revolution Radio freedomslips.com, where the truth never sleeps.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
No, how dare you?
No, no, how dare you?
How dare you? No, no, my, how dare you?
You dare condemn me?
How dare you? How dare me when I, how dare you? You big peepee head.
Hello, all. Thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio. We are the number one public access commercial-free internet talk radio station on the web, with between 12 and 16 hours of live programming per day, bringing you news, politics, entertainment, and just plain human interactive talks with our extremely informative and successful nightly open caller roundtables. And how do we do this? Through the support of volunteers and donations from good listeners like you. So if you're digging what you hear, and we are bringing you an entertaining and informative service, please visit our site support page and donate to the cause. Keep us live, keep us kicking, help us bring you the talk. We are already here. Help keep us here. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio!
God, the pressure!
Revolution Radio. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Whole Agenda Radio Show for the second hour of the broadcast. I'm your host, Robert Pepino, broadcasting to you live on RevolutionSlipstream.com. I just want to tell you all that this is a 100% listener-sponsored broadcast, and I'd like to just mention this at the top of the hour, that, you know, without you, we would not be here. This would not be possible. It is the number one listener-sponsored broadcast network on the internet, as well as some micro stations as well. So if you can, Please support us and donate if you can, $5, $10, $20, whatever your means are. We would be most appreciative of that because, you know, we're here for you. We're not getting a paycheck from this. We're doing this because we want to do this and we want to inform you. And we feel it's our duty to inform you of what's going on. And the incredible guests that we have on this network, like my guest this evening, Stan Deo. And for all of you who are just joining us right now, just a real quick synopsis of Stan's bio. Stan Deo has held an above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. Now, he was part of an extensive an exclusive black project held headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. And, of course, Stan has done just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of radio shows as well as video interviews as well. He is also the active partner in Deo Enterprises LLC and is the CEO of Halo Orbital Technologies. And just a quick correction from the top of the hour that Holly Deo, his wife, wrote the book, Dare to Prepare, and it's basically 26 chapters, telling 69, you how, 69. Excuse me, 69, 69, not 60, 69 chapters on how to prepare for the days ahead that we all have to face, and we are facing them on a daily basis. Real quick, also, for all of you who want to call in for the second hour and ask Stan any question you would like, the call-in number is 347-688-2902. Again, that number is 347-688-2902. Please call in, and I will put you on hold, and then I will introduce you, and you can ask Stan any question you would like. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to answer it as long as he can. But Stan, welcome back to the second hour, and incredible information brought out the first hour. But getting back to what you were saying in regards to these anomalous hot spots, I guess, is the best way I can describe them, that they have not moved. And we have seen this fracturing taking place on this southern, most Pacific continent, correct?
The hot spots are in the northern part of the Indian Ocean, and the antipodal point is in Central America, the northern part of South America.
Okay.
I've been looking while we were at the break here on NASA's site, where they talk about what happens during a magnetic pole reversal on the planet, shows what happens to the magnetic fields inside the planet. And they show, let's see, one, two, three. They show three pairs of magnetic poles floating around inside the Earth as the poles start to drift, you know, to reverse. Now, according to them, a pole reversal, you know, takes 1,000 years or more to do. I don't believe that for a minute. And they say that during this time, don't worry because we'll still be shielded, that the field won't go to zero. And that's correct. The field won't go to zero, but it will be weakened a great deal, and there will be two or three north poles floating around. And in between all these three sets of magnetic poles, there are going to be holes in our magnetic field where the radiation can get through and hurt us. So it may not bathe the whole planet in ultraviolet radiation and gamma radiation, but it's going to have hot spots. And I've sent you the link there that you can, I guess, post on your chat or blog there to look at what NASA says. They give you a graphic illustration of what happens when the pole shift changes. And we may be seeing the front end of a pole change right now. I mean, this hot spot I'm seeing is just totally anomalous, unless it's something like this that's causing the turbulence inside the magnetic field generator of our planet. But anyway, you can see it with this picture that I'm sent the link to you.
Right. And you know what? I'll go ahead and post that on my site right after the show as All quickly right. as I can. What was it? I think in 2010 or 2009 or 2008, Stan, I can't remember. Scientists were over on the African continent, and they were talking about how it takes thousands of years for massive fissures to open up and fracture. While they were there, a massive fissure opened up in the plate, the African plate, and they actually had to take off in their helicopters as this was happening. And this 300, I think it was, I don't know how many miles. I can't remember correctly. I want to say like 5 or 6 mile wide fissure with a depth of about 300 feet straight down just opened up right in front of their eyes. So I need to concur exactly what you said, that these things do not happen slowly. I think they happen very quickly in a matter of a day or two. And then I think after that process has happened, it restarts that slow evolutionary momentum process.
Right. Yeah, it's more catastrophic than gradually. It's the Darwinian kind of gradualism that says, oh, these things happen over millennia and over hundreds of millennia and this and that. Whereas the catastrophic view of Earth history says these things, they can happen, you know, rapidly in days and that kind of stuff. Look at the continents. You know, they're, if you put all the continents of the Earth together, squeeze them together, and then squeeze the Earth down 25% of its current diameter, all the continents will fit together perfectly into one landmass. During the time of one of the early pharaohs of Egypt, the first period, I believe it was, he complained about the Earth moaning and groaning, when will this be over? And I think that was, according to the biblical records, in the time of Peleg, which in Hebrew means the time of the breaking up or the splitting. And that's probably in modern times that the tectonic plates have moved, you know, thousands of miles apart. And that's not gradual. That's catastrophic.
I agree. If you were to take any one of these plates and move them by, let's say, 500 feet in a very rapid fashion, that's catastrophic. Because anybody living on that plate or near or around that plate would experience complete and total catastrophic failure. There's no question about it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just looking here while we're talking, trying to find an article about that fissure that opened up in North Africa. There was a 60-kilometer long, that'd be about 37-mile long fissure suddenly formed in the Afar Depression.
That was it. Thank you, Stan. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what is interesting about that, on a side note about that, is you're near the Danakil Plains. And in the second book I wrote called The Vindicator Scrolls, I located the Garden of Eden. From retranslating a lot of the old Hebrew and the Torah and some other stuff. And I found that the Danakil Plains, which is at the top end of the Great East African Rift, that, you know, that thousand or so long tear in the Earth's surface, it's the largest tear in the Earth's surface anywhere. But it's right there at the southern, kind of southern eastern section of the Red Sea. The Danakil Plains is a little Afar triangle there. And it's very hot. There's at least 13 volcanoes that are, you know, belching stuff out of there all the time. In the Bible, it says after the conflict between Jesus and Satan in the final war of Armageddon, that Satan is cast down, the body he inhabited of the human that was in charge of the earth at the time, the Antichrist, is cast down into the hot stones of Eden where he is dead, the body is. And the Hot Stones of Eden talks about the Afar Triangle, and that's now active. I mean, I just saw a documentary on one of the Doco channels here on the dish yesterday, or in fact today talking about it. So that area is definitely dynamic and starting to do something rather rapidly. You're correct on that, and I'm just adding to that even the Bible speaks about that exact location.
Well, you know. Stan, because of the, you know, the, I mean, you come from both sides. You come from the Christian biblical side of things as well as from the scientific view. I think you have a tremendous grasp of both ends of the situation. We've been discussing mostly the scientific part of all this. And I believe as well as you, and we've discussed this in the past, as well as probably entering some sort of pole shift, whether it be magnetic or physical, there is an expansion happening as well. But coming from the other side of this, Stan, you know, of course, as of late, the prophecies of Saint Malachy predicting the 112 popes and the stepping down of Pope Ratzinger, and now the new pope. I think his name is Jorge Galeano. I think I haven't paid that much attention to it, Stan, because I don't follow it very closely. I'm sure you're much more aware of it than I am. But how do you see this fitting in? And do you believe that the Saint Malachy prophecies have come to fruition? And is this pope maybe Petrus Romanus or Peter the Roman, simply given a different name at this point, or is something going to happen to him and then Petrus Romanus will step up being the last pope, and then of course the seven hills of Rome will fall, so on and so forth?
Well, there's still a lot of discussion going on about the various links in his birthplace and his parentage and in the Francis, Saint Francis, after whom he took his title, Francis.
Right,
Saint
Francis of Assisi, right?
Yeah, with it was the patron saint of the animals, but his name had Romanus in it or something. I forget what it is, but there've been a lot of discussions from different angles saying that this guy is the one fulfilling the Malachy prophecy, but. I don't know. I'm reserving judgment. I think that some of the phrases that have described the popes in the past of those 112 that in the prophecy, that the descriptions to match them up were stretching it a bit, but they did appear to fit what the prophecy said. Even Nostradamus, I think, had some quatrains in there that talked about the Black Pope. And, of course, this pope is a Jesuit. And the head of the Jesuit order is called the Black Pope.
Right.
Now, they're the military or warfare arm of the church, the Catholic Church, set usually in opposition to the established or elected pope. Now we have the Black Pope and the traditional pope sitting in the same seat. It's the same guy. So he certainly fulfills the Nostradamus implication that it's like a black pope. But again, these things are rather, nebulous type discussions at this point. I think we have to let him sit in office and do a few things. I did find it was quite coincidental that lightning struck the St. Peter's Basilica.
I found that quite surprising myself. I saw the photograph. I was a little taken back, I have to tell you.
Well, and for a camera to catch that on the day, I mean, there were so many neat little coincidences around that you think, wow, this has got to be something to pay attention to. Yeah, I mean, if you're into portents and signs and things, I suppose, but one of those incredibly rare coincidences, you see.
Stan, I don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe in them. So I think everything happens for a reason. From my point of view, it seems like everything is kind of falling into place. I know that, there's the difference between prophecy and prediction. Prophecy really can't be altered. Predictions are almost kind of self-fulfilling if you allow them to be. But I also know that human thought, human interaction, that part of it changes instantaneously, nanosecond by nanosecond. So, you're right. It's rather vague. There's a lot of gray area involved in all this. But then again, if you look, you do this on a daily basis much more than I do, and we see what's happening around the planet, it sure seems that we're headed that way.
Well, look at this pope now. There's something else. He is a Jesuit, right? And
right.
The Jesuits, in the early days of their formation, their objective was to wipe out the Protestantism that had split apart from the church and bring them back into the fold. So if this guy follows the Jesuit directive, he's going to be trying to shut down Protestantism and bring it back into Catholicism, which is not going to sit well with a lot of us that are in the Protestant movement. It's certainly not going to sit well with me, because my family back in France, the Deyo family, we had to escape France in 1650, 1645, I guess it was, because of the Huguenot persecutions by the church, and we lost our property and titles.
Did you say 1645?
Yeah.
Well, you want to hear something very strange and ironic. My father traced our family history, our family tree, back in our hometown in it's called Frigento in southern Italy, in the province. It's the province of Campania, which there are lots of small towns in that area. But he chased our family history going back to the 1600s, where the records stopped, that were brought down from France. And our last name was not Pepino then, but before we came to Italy and immigrated, we were Pepin, which was French. And we came from some sort of lordship of some type, is how he described it. And we immigrated from France to Italy. I find that very intriguing.
Actually, ours was – what date was that? 16 – what did they immigrate?
Right around the 1600s.
Well, it was 1654 when my family finally arrived via England into New York State in New Paltz. In fact, our family home is still there from that date. It's part of a museum. And we escaped from France because of the persecutions. Interesting.
Wow. Yeah, very interesting. Again, I don't believe in coincidence. But it's amazing to me that everything that we're watching. I mean, really, it's been said it's an exciting time. How did the Chinese put it? May you live in exciting times, as to put a curse upon you.
Yes. So. Yes. Well, you know, Obama came out today. I think it was yesterday, and said that. That they're at least a year away of producing a nuclear bomb in Iran, trust me type thing, you know.
And
I'm thinking, right, Netanyahu gets up and tells you that by March, right now, that they would have what they need to make a basic atom bomb, and that's if they don't get one from North Korea to use, right?
And I was just going to mention North Korea. How do they play into all this?
That crazy devil over there, I tell you what, he represents a small people, and the Antichrist comes to power using a small people to gain his power. And if they give the Iranians, or even Syrians, crazy Syrians, a nuclear device to launch at Israel, Israel's going to have to make a preemptive strike or take it down and take a measured response to it. And this is going to set the world entirely against Israel as the cause of the problem, in spite of it not being the cause of the problem. So I'm watching this Middle East situation just very closely.
Well, that's what I was getting to next, is that they said that the Antichrist would rise from the east.
Yep.
So I guess you can consider North Korea at that point, you know, an eastern part of the globe, correct? And not necessarily Middle Eastern.
Well, the eastern part of the Roman Empire, there are two lakes, the western and the eastern, when they broke up the Roman Empire. And he can come from the eastern lake, which includes a lot of Asian and Middle Eastern places. I don't know if Korea was part of that, but I'm just waiting to see. You know, this guy's going to have to not be like a military dictator. He's going to have to be someone that all the cultures and religions and nations of the world will say, oh, well, let's give this guy a go. You know, he's peaceful and he's powerful and he's going to make, you know, everything right. I don't think that a crazy North Korean is going to be what majority of the people will follow. But the guy is out there in the wing somewhere. And I'm keeping my eye on a couple of players at the moment, but we'll see.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Some people say the Antichrist has been born. Some say he has not been born. There's multiple takes on this at this point. But, you know, looking at the time that we are in, I would say at this point he's been born in an adult to some capacity, but has not really been – has not been introduced or has not shown himself yet.
His nickname in the Old Testament is the Assyrian, and that's – perhaps his birthplace, and that's part of the Eastern Roman Empire. It's part of northern Israel, what used to be Assyria. And I've got my eye on a guy there in Israel who is 68, and who is very connected, has been in politics since the time of Perez. He worked for Perez, and we'll see. He's certainly fitting a lot of the bill at the moment.
So you're saying that the Antichrist would be an older gentleman and not so much young like a Barack Obama?
No, I don't think Obama's going to be it. He might be playing into the hands or helping the anti-Christian or the Antichrist at this time, but I don't think he's got the cojones for what's going to be needed. He's too busy playing golf. He's just not really a major player.
Well, I mean, at this point, wouldn't he wouldn't this Antichrist already have a controlling majority over most countries and city-states?
Not until the world is at its wit's end and wants to set up a world government for peace, so that all the nations of the world have to submit, whether they like it or not, to this new world order, new world law, new world economy, new world religion. And the catalyst might be a threat of nuclear war starting in the Middle East over the Israel-Iranian situation. It might be collapse of the world economy at the same time. It might be the weather creating tremendous famines and drought, which is happening now. It might be a pandemic starting with some new terrible bug or virus, which there are rumors of at the moment. These things, if they all come at once, will make people cry out for a solution. And as I put in the Cosmic Conspiracy in 1978, the Club of Rome put out a model of how to run the planet, putting all the nations of the world into 10 nations, 10 supranations, sharing common goals, objectives, and problems. And that map is in the book Cosmic Conspiracy on page 200. And I document where I got it from, and it shows every nation on Earth. It gives a list of what region they fall into. And biblical prophecy does say that the Antichrist will rule over 10 nations of the world. And that is in place since 1978. We've now got a pope who wants to return everyone to Rome, you know, get away from Protestantism. He wants to make Rome a power center. And the Catholic Church does have the ear of a lot of kings and queens and leaders all over the earth.
Wow. I'm trying to figure out even where to begin with that statement that you just made. Okay, so if this person has been born, this Antichrist has been born, and has not come into light yet, but now we have the whole world, at least the figureheads of the whole world, trying to bring the whole world into the new world order. We have basically a systemic collapse, a monetary collapse taking place between the two major players, which is Europe and the United States. Australia is affected by this as well. China is going through a detrimental real estate bubble explosion or collapse right now. Would you say that we are seeing the implementation of this, and maybe, you know, a year or 2 years down the line, that this Antichrist would step into light and say, okay, now I'm here and I'm going to solve your problems, meaning that he's going to really destroy everything at that point?
Well, he won't admit initially. There will be actions on his part that will convince people, yeah, okay, this is a good guy. He has the right idea. He's making people behave. He's stopping the Islamic Christian-Judaic conflict. He's used force, but he has done it wisely, and that they will not break free of what he has said for them to do to make peace. Now, this is like Nimrod in the Old Testament story, where Nimrod built the Tower of Babel. Now, the Tower of Babel, when you translate that to English, it's a high place where there's a doorway to the gods, Babel. Now, that was Nimrod trying to reach up into the heavens to, it was like a Stargate in essence. He was trying to reach up into the parallel universe where God dwells. Now, Satan is known to be one that put snares out amongst mankind and twist and traps mankind and try to bring mankind down in the sight of God. Now, if I were to tell you that there is a guy like that, whose name even says that in Hebrew, wouldn't that be interesting, especially if he was born in the old Assyrian Empire?
It would be extremely interesting. Stan, we have somebody online just joined us, and looks like he wants to ask you a few questions. Steve, are you there?
Hello.
Steve, how's welcome. Going? Good. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Stan?
Yeah, I do. I heard you guys were talking about the global politics situation, and I had a question that I felt was a little undermined earlier, because I tried to get it out there on the air during Kerry Cassidy's show, and it didn't quite get out, although I heard it was asked. I was thinking, we have coming up this month, we have Barack Obama is supposed to go to Israel, and then apparently what I didn't know was that at the same time, Joe Biden is going to Rome. What we're looking at is an interesting event. There have been people whispering that, you know, because of his relationship now in the Middle East, you know, how much he is disliked by Israel, that him
we're
going
talking
to
about
Israel,
Obama? Are you talking
yes.
about Obama's? Okay,
yes.
Go on.
That we are talking about, you know, the thing that I reluctantly say, because I do not wish this even on my greatest enemies, when I know that it only will make things worse for us, is would be his assassination. Thus, this would make Joe Biden officially the president while he is seeing the Pope. Think about that.
Yep. Yep.
And I think that needs to be talked about, because that is a very, very real possibility.
Well, didn't that happen with Kennedy as Johnson took over, and as well with Nixon and Ford?
No. He wasn't seeing the Pope or anything. But Johnson was prepared with a pocket constitution on Air Force One that he was holding on hand, you know, very conspicuously.
And again, Steve, I don't believe in coincidences either.
Oh, neither do I.
Look, we knew in Texas. I was born and raised there in Dallas. Yeah, Johnson was – he was controlled by the mafia boss down in Hidalgo County, George Parr. Yeah, George Parr, I think his name was. And Johnson knew the morning of the assassination that they were going to shoot Kennedy, and that's why he moved himself out of the limousine and made the governor go with Kennedy, and he rode in the car behind. He didn't want to get hit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are several players that can be implemented in the Kennedy assassination. You know, but this one is quite. This is pretty crazy, because we are talking about, I mean, Joe Biden is a Catholic, I believe.
Yes, he is. Yes.
Yeah. So you've got Joe Biden, the Catholic, you know, he's going to see the Pope. You know, he's got a really great chance, you know, of the Pope being involved in him being sworn in as the president if something were to happen to Barack Hussein Obama.
Right.
And that is something to be highly concerned about.
Absolutely.
You know?
I hadn't put the pieces together, but boy, you're right.
Mm-hmm. You know, because this is because if we're talking about, you know, if we're talking about one of the proper ways of looking at what I call it a psyop. I don't really call it a prophecy, but I call it the psyop of the Book of Revelations. Then it is well understood that the Vatican and thus the Pope would be the propped up false prophet.
Yes.
Well, I want to throw something into the mix here, Stan, and maybe for you as well, Steve. What about the Fatima prophecies? That it was supposed to be, the last prophecy was supposed to be released in 1960. And that the Pope then said it was too grave of a prophecy to release, and Pence has never really truly been released, and they said it was in regards to the Roman Catholic Church and something to do with maybe the downfall or degradation of the Roman Catholic Church. I happen to believe, my personal take on this, is that it actually has to do with catastrophic earth changes, and that's why it was too horrific to even mention, because if the world knew that it was going to end in 2013 or 2014 or whatever the date is, and the world doesn't end, of course, Stan, just, you know, a part of humanity does, what would be the point?
You know, I heard that.
Hold on, Steve. Steve, hold on 1 second. Let's let Stan.
Go ahead. I'll come in a minute, Steve. Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
Oh, just a quick thing. I was just going to say, I heard that Cardinal Ratzinger was the steward of the third Fatima prophecy. He was the guy who was, you know, by his word, that prophecy comes or goes. That's all I was going to say. Please.
All right. Well, now let me just back up. Now the third. Prophecy of the Fatima prophecy was opened up in the presence of Pope John the 23rd. He opened it up, and in the room with him, among other people at the time, was a Jesuit priest who later caught me out in the middle of the Nullarbor Desert, and we talked about this, and he told me what the Pope John the 23rd swooned and fainted because he thought for a second that it meant he was the one that was going to lead the sheep astray and to destroy the Catholic Church. But obviously it wasn't. And it's the one that we've got now, which adds credence to the Malachi prophecy that the last pope would lead the sheep astray and many would, you know, die because of this. And, you know, when you put those two streams together, and I'm talking about a guy that was in the room when the prophecy was read by the pope. So it's definitely on the church itself and the last pope, as opposed to the earth changes entirely, even though those are mentioned briefly in the third prophecy.
As far as I've ever heard it, Stan, you know, I've heard both sides of the argument, but I remember this clearly when Father Malachi Martin was on our Bells show, which you are very clearly familiar with,
yes,
you being a frequent guest on that program, that Malachi Martin said that it involved the whole of humanity,
yes,
and then that it would not be in 20 years or in 10 years, but more within years, very close to a timeline. And I believe when he did this interview, I think it was 1997, and he said it was approaching us at a very rapid rate. And then I think they had also talked about the fact that they had built, you know, that there was a rush, and you know this as well, to build the Southern Pole Telescope, and then of course before that they erected the telescope, as a matter of fact, here in Arizona, to look at deep space objects. Now, you know, the curiosity at this point goes, well, why would the church, or the Vatican for that matter, or the Club of Rome, whoever is in, you know, key control of this at this point, want to put up a telescope? For what reason? I mean, they've never been based on any scientific background. It's always been on a spiritual or religious background to a certain degree. So my thought process, Stan, goes to the fact that, okay, well, they're putting up a telescope for a specific reason. Has to do something with, you know, a body that obviously they were not made aware of, but maybe were aware of through prophecy, hence the Fatima prophecy or predictions, and hurriedly in 19, oh gosh, I can't remember the year they put this up, to put up this telescope to search for what in the skies?
Well, a couple things. I called into the show to talk to Malachi Martin when he was on there in, where it was, 97 with Art, because I'd been on the show a few times by that time with Art. And I asked, you know, I told Malachi what I had heard from the Jesuit priest, and he agreed completely with what I just told you.
Right.
Now, the other thing about putting the observatory up in the Southern Hemisphere, they could be looking for an object, like you're saying, a planetary object coming in, a comet or, you know, Planet X or whatever, I don't know. But the other part of it would be looking for the arrival with it of beings, you know, alien-type beings, because you'll notice that the Catholic Church has now said, well, their souls can be saved too. So that might have been something so horrific to try to lay on people in 1960s, I forget, I think it was around then when 23rd was in the papacy. But anyway, those kind of statements had to be reserved for now because people couldn't take it. It'd be too big to swallow, and it probably would have fragmented the church at the time. But you're right. The observatory is there to see something, and the fact that they put it in the southern hemisphere means a southern approaching type object we can't see here. And that might be a sign for the event of other beings making their arrival here to the Earth at the same time.
Well, I did not actually think about it that way, but now that you said that, that absolutely does make sense to a very large degree. But then what of the, you know, this can spill over into many different ways. I mean, Stan, you know, the hundreds of thousands of sightings, the hundreds of thousands of contacts or abductions, you know, you could be looked at many different ways there. If you've been involved in part of that, you know that my involvement in that, and that is to me as a contact, because I chose for that to happen. We have all these crafts around the planet, they're very well aware of what is taking place physically on the planet. I'm trying to understand this, that okay, if they're either looking for an object, a planet, or what Zachariah Sitchin had put together in regards to Planet X and the return of the Anunnaki, which is just a generic term, more or less, the way I see it is a generic term for super beings coming back.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I'm going to point you to a often misunderstood part of the book of Daniel, chapter 2, verse 41 through 44. And it is this. Basically, it talks about a dream that King Nebuchadnezzar is giving, and Daniel translates it for him because the king couldn't get any of his astrologers to translate it. And it gave a view of a man with a head of gold and chest of brass, silver, whatever, down to his, it described him made of different metals going all the way down to his toes. And it was a progression of kingdoms that would come and go, ruling over Israel until the end of the time. Now, his legs were made of iron, and iron was the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire had the west and the eastern legs, exactly called that. Now, the iron went down into feet and toes, and the toes were made of iron and clay. And it says a strange thing, that the clay and the iron would not mix with the seed of man. You know, the seed of man would not mix with him. And it later goes on in Daniel to talk about an alien god coming to Earth to back the Antichrist of this age. Now, if the Vatican is looking for the alien seed to come, as was in the book of Daniel there, and the 10 kingdoms, or the 10 toes of that, or the 10 regions of Earth, then I retranslated and retranslated and retranslated that until I found out that the clay were basically the weaker toes, and the iron toes were the strong ones that could crush and break the clay toes, and these are regions. And it says later in the book of Daniel that the imposter god, little g god, coming, would give technologies to the Antichrist of this age in return for lands and people. And the clay toes represent those nations. We don't know how many of them, whether it's five and five or two or three or what. But they are to be given over to the alleged gods under the god Satan, but he will call himself something else. He'll try to be the Messiah. It's a great deception. And he will treat them like fodder, like food almost. He will consume the people of these nations that are weak clay nations that won't stand up against his technology. Now, that's what it says there in the book of Daniel. and it's been hidden until this time here in 2010 when I started retranslating to get to the bottom of it. And I spent 3 months retranslating just 8 verses very painstakingly. Now, if the Catholic Church is aware of the coming of these beings and they're thinking that's the coming of the Messiah when it's not, they could be fooled. And that's how the Pope of the Church at that time could lead the Church astray in following him. And Satan and those who are coming with him could use the Club of Rome model to divide the earth up into 10 regions and would assist, you know, the Pope, Catholicism, the Vatican, in setting up a religious order that includes all of the religions of the world. And since 1977, I've known that the Catholic Church has been doing everything it can to make a meeting of the minds to form a global religion, including Islam into Catholicism and Catholicism into Islam, to find a common global religion. They've been holding meetings all over the planet doing this.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, let me ask you this then, Stan. I mean, as you were talking, I'm thinking, well, the contacts with our government, I think, for the most part, and what we have seen in multiple videos and multiple transcriptions that have been released talking about the grays, the very, you know, tiny 3 to 5 foot basically android, biological android beings that are simply probably controlled by a higher power that have that crashed in 47 and from what I understand in multiple places on our planet that we have worked with them to some degree. They have given us antiquated technology, but we have been able to develop, of course, to our understanding, a very new technology, which has been part of the whole Black Ops project, which, you know, you had some interaction with in your life in the, you know, in development of the flying tech saucer technology, or develop of anti-gravity or non-gravity. Do you feel that that might be part of that equation?
Sorry, what part of what you said I was...
Well, the alien gray part of that, I think it's probably,
yeah, oh yeah, of course they are.
Probably the biggest part.
Well, they've been produced, I'm sure, by beings that look like us but are taller, and those are the ones that the Bible calls Satan and those who follow him from the universe, you know, parallel universe, which are cast down to earth in the last days, where they were prepared to make war with the Messiah when he comes to claim his title here. Now, they know that, you know, the people of Earth, a great deal of them, have read the Bible and or had it read to them, and know that they're expecting Satan to come and, you know, to make war with the Messiah. So, and they're expecting to see an evil being or evil group of beings come and afflict us until the Messiah comes. Well, okay, if we have these little black or little gray critters that are made by Satan as cyborgs or whatever, and they are soulless, you know, biological robots of some sort that have been abducting people and mutilating cattle and that kind of stuff, these present a fear factor into the population and identify these grays as the bad guys, and can be explained away as bad guys when Satan comes and says, look, he's posing as a messenger of light, harmony, love, and look, I'm coming to help you. I know that you guys are in strife and been waiting for me for a long time. I am your God. I created you here. It was a genetic thing that we did, and you're old enough now then and in knowledge as a race to know that that you were created to manipulated. Your DNA was manipulated to make you what you are today, and I did that, he'll say. And now I'm going to get rid of these gray aliens. They're from a bad part of the universe, and they're well known to afflict people, civilizations like yours and worlds like yours, and we'll get rid of them right now, and they're gone. They won't come back, and we're here among you, and we'll lead you into, you know, the peaceful times of the millennium. And it will be as Matthew, the book of Matthew says, and I think it's 24th chapter now, that he will come posing like that as a God, as God, as the Messiah, but don't believe it. Especially if he says, I am in this secret place or out in the desert, you have to come to me here. For when the real God comes, the real Messiah, he will be seen all over the planet at once by all living things in a flash, like the east from the west as the lightning flashes. So these things tell us that the grays are part of the deception, a great deception. It says, do not be fooled by this great deception. It's going to be so clever that it could fool even the very elect of believers, if possible. But it will not be possible.
Interesting, Stan. Very interesting. You know, Steve is still with us. I'm sorry, Steve. I didn't mean to neglect you there, buddy. Did you have anything to add? Did you want to ask Stan?
It's okay. You know, you got your guest tonight, and he knows much more than I do about this. But, you know, when we're talking about all the things that they're looking at, I mean, I think it's a little bit simpler. I mean, you look at Revelation, there's at least two events that they talk about in Revelation that would be specific reasons why you'd want a telescope. You've got amongst the seven trumpets, you have the third angel, you know, who proclaims Wormwood's arrival. And then in chapter 9, there's the personified star named Abaddon. So, I think you'd want to have a telescope to see when Wormwood and Abaddon are showing up. And well, then there's other areas that seem similar.
Steve, I agree with you. And if you think about it, Abaddon, doesn't he open up the gates to let that army of critters out of the inside of the earth to afflict mankind?
Maybe. Right now I'm using Wikipedia. Falls from heaven to the earth and is given the key to the bottomless pit.
And lets them out. Okay. So that's B.
Interesting. Hmm.
And, you know, that could all easily be a psyop if you don't want to acknowledge deep underground military bases and the fact that we can have fleets of weird things under there that are designed to look like whatever the heck fits the bill.
You know what the bottomless pit is? Have you ever tried to imagine or visualize a bottomless pit?
Well, man, my imagination has gone from so many things.
I thought it was Mel's hole. Remember that guy? I remember that guy.
No. But seriously, the inside of a hollow ball is a bottomless pit. And the earth does have a void inside of it.
Yes, and there's the idea of the hollow earth theory, which I do subscribe to, although I see the occupation of the hollow earth as a bit of a interdimensional thing, where they don't exist there in this world. So we would be talking about effectively a piercing of the dimensional veil, and there seems to be some evidence pointing out of what the truth is about half the reason why they're photoshopping things for Google Earth is that the North Pole has a big gaping, like a gigantic hole. And it's one of the reasons why North Pole travel is wholly restricted because they don't want people discovering the entrance to Hollow Earth. But there's some leaked footage that apparently really isn't photoshopped showing this hole from outer space. And it's huge. It's
Steve, you mentioned that because if you go to Google Sky, or I think it's Sky Map or Google Sky, there is a section of Google Sky. And I'm pretty sure you're familiar with this, that one section of it. And I think, what is it near Taurus? I think.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Is completely blocked out, yet you can see rays of light where they put this black, you know, rectangular blot up. You could see actually on the either side of that some sort of flaring, some orangish type flaring coming out.
It's on the left side of Orion.
Yes, that's it.
Below his belt.
Yeah, that's it.
A little bit south of his quote unquote sword, which we know it's not his sword, but I'm being PG.
Sure.
you know, just below his sword. Yeah. And it's just like, there is no logical reason why satellite footage of that area should be blocked.
Why would it be
blocked? This is a huge chunk of outer space. This is light years of outer space being just not even, they couldn't have just like faked some stars. They wanted you to know that they took something out, which is very interesting that they wanted you to know that it's there.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to mention that.
Well, you know, when Ezekiel saw the flaming chariot where the God came down to speak to him there, he appeared up in the air, over the horizon, in essence, coming from the clouds, burning, flaming, warm type thing, and comes down right in front of Ezekiel. Now, that area is a gateway. Somewhere up there is a gateway between the dimensions, between the universes, because Satan's principality is of the air. Up there is his gateway, where he'd been coming and going to wherever the parallel universe is around us. But he was up at that radius, at that altitude from the center of our planet. Now, I think there's more than one parallel universe, and that at the lower level, where the disembodied spirits and people are, that there's a zone or like a sphere of a gateway to that. And I'm agreeing with what Steve was saying about it being a dimensional interface, and that the bottomless pit there is a void, a spherical void, and the gateway to it might be at the polar regions. Because I do, under my new understanding of the physics of gravity, in a paper I've been writing, I do see that many of our planets, that we've got photos of their poles, have a small hole in the top of them. Mars, for example, is definitely there. And it's not just a vortexual spin of ice. There's two holes, where the hole was and where it is now. And that all planets, at certain stages of their evolution, open and close those holes, as just kind of oscillates back and forth. And so sometimes they're there and sometimes they're not. But I don't think they're quite as big as that image I've seen on the internet, that big black circle.
Well, Stan, I don't mean to interrupt you. It looks like we have one more last real quick call. It's okay. You just called in now. We have one real last quick call before the show is over. Now, this is going to go to a roundtable after this. And I've been, maybe stick around for it if you'd like to. I don't know what your schedule is.
Hello? My schedule includes taking a 5-minute break.
There you go. So you take that 5-minute break. Area code 313, welcome to the show. Real quick for Stan, ask your question, please.
I hate to take away from your conversation. Unfortunately, I do not have a question. Okay. My name's Seth. Seth Michael. I actually host the Second Foundation show.
Hey, hi, Seth. How are you? I'm sorry.
Hey, Robert. No, it's good to talk to you. I was actually listening to your show here at my house through my Roku player, even. And I heard a loud explosion outside, and my power has been out now. So I was calling to inform the station, being that this is the only method I have of calling in right now, to let everybody know that my power is out. I have a show scheduled for a few hours from now, and power should be back on, and it shouldn't be a problem, but in case I don't show up, everyone will know why.
Yeah, Seth Michael is a host on this network, and